The temptation to lead as a chess master, controlling each move of the organization, must give way to an approach as a gardener, enabling each rather than directing. We open today's show with a quote from the book Team of Teams that we covered in our third installment of the series from the chapter Leading Like a Gardener, in which McChrystal discusses the balance between managing and leading, directing and enabling. Over the last five shows of the series, we've discussed how we as athletic trainers can lead ourselves and others during our practice. But how does one go about herding cats and lead a large organization of athletic trainers and other sports medicine professionals? Joining us today to shine a light on that question is the manager of athletic training for Henry Ford Health Systems, Dr. Christina Ayers. Welcome, Christina.
Hi, thank you.
And as always, Jeremy down in Houston. How are you doing, Jeremy?
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership. Ayers, which is E-Y-E-R-S. So this one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership, E-Y-E-R-S. If you want to check out the show notes, some of her responses or things we mentioned as far as like books or anything like that. So Dr. Ayers, it is a pleasure to meet you again. I actually met her at AT Cares in Houston. So we took the course together. And so we didn't, you know, you don't put the name and the face together until I guess there's another thing. And she's like, hey, I think I've met you before. I was like, oh, yeah. So this isn't actually our first time meeting. So,
yeah.
That's awesome. She is pretty famous, so.
Infamous, right?
Infamous, yes. So why don't you go ahead, we'll get going, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I did my undergrad at University of Michigan. I like to tell folks that I graduated in 97. No, I did not work football in 1997. I was actually in my first semester of grad school. So that hurt a little bit, but definitely go blue. I then went to University of Alabama for my master's, and everybody said, wait, you went down south? Well, I wanted a conference that was comparable to the Big Ten, and I found that in the SEC and then some. So I did my master's there. I actually worked with track and field. I had both men's and women's track and field my first year. We had different coaches. One went to Penn Relays, one went to Drake Relays. So then we ended up splitting, and I worked just men's track and field my second year, and I helped out with football, which was really, really exciting. From there, I went to Saginaw Valley State University with my first job, D2. And then after a couple of years there, I took the assistant professor position, clinical education coordinator at Central Michigan, and was there for about a decade. My family was moving down to this area, so in Detroit, and I started kind of doing some investigating of what health systems or companies I wanted to work for, and Henry Ford was by far one of my top choices, so that was really exciting.
So tell us a little bit about Henry Ford and the uniqueness of Henry Ford in for those of us who are joining from kind of across the country, just the uniqueness of the hospital systems within Detroit and why Henry Ford kind of stuck out to you.
Henry Ford's a not-for-profit, which is awesome. We try to do a lot of good in the community. It was actually founded with the support of Henry Ford himself, and he really wanted to help people in the area get health care. So it's been in existence for over 100 years. He actually had a pool at Clara Ford Pavilion, which is where we used to have the School of Nursing and dormitories. And so he used to come to Henry Ford and swim. And he was really interested in wellness and health and sport over 100 years ago. For myself, Henry Ford Sports Medicine has been in existence for about three decades, working with some of the professional teams in the area. For me, I wanted to be with a health system that really recognized athletic training, supported athletic training, and Henry Ford was one of them. So that was really neat. We have about 20 college, universities, high schools in the area. We work with the professional teams, about 15 physicians, about 30 athletic trainers, and that's grown over the years since I've been at Henry Ford.
I know ever since Christy and I have known each other for close to about 10 years now. And, when she took over at Henry Ford, me being at the high school level, we've always been in contact with, in communication, and Christina's been integral in bringing a second athletic trainer to Bloomfield Hills High School. I wanted to work with somebody that I knew was going to get the job done, that was going to provide, not just for me, but really benefit my athletes and my teams and my coaches, and who is going to provide that individualized care. We have, like I said, we have a handful of other hospital systems in the area, even right down the road from Henry Ford. And I know the other people at the other hospital systems. I just knew Henry Ford and Christina was going to be the type of person. And definitely over the last couple of years, Henry Ford has really grown with their athletic medicine and the amount of athletic trainers that they employ. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I mean, we have probably more than doubled in size for athletic training, which is very exciting. I have a department chair and a department administrator that are huge proponents of athletic training and see the value that we bring. Being a not-for-profit, kind of the mantra that we have for our staff is just provide good quality health care. By providing that good quality health care, you know, you're gaining the trust of your athletes. If they come see us, you know, on the flip side of it, great. If they don't, that's okay as well. You know, people are going to pick and choose for various reasons. Some have insurances that don't want or don't allow us to participate. So then they have to go to another health system. I've actually gone with one of my athletes to another health system in the area because mom was very anxious about the appointment. And asked that I come so that way I could kind of explain to them what was going on. That meant the world to me, you know, and so at the end of the day, it's not, you know, how many people can we funnel through, but how do we give good quality health care? And if it can't be through Henry Ford Sports Medicine, how do we kind of have connections in the area to be able to refer them to the right spot? John, you know this, sometimes you call that generic number and they tell you, oh, your daughter injured her knee at basketball. It's going to take about 3 weeks to see the provider. Well, that athlete doesn't have 3 weeks. And with the acute nature of that, you know, do you hold them from sport? Do you not? What's going on? So rather than, you know, send the kid to the emergency room, you know, it's great to have the network that we have amongst athletic trainers, but then also physicians to be able to get those kids in pretty quickly elsewhere too. You know, these docs and these providers want to see those acute injuries. So we try to kind of break down those barriers.
So you talked that your chair sees the importance of athletic trainers. Obviously that's very important to have somebody in a higher up position that sees the importance of athletic trainers. Obviously we know the importance of athletic trainers. Did you have a part in that in creating that, that understanding, and have you had to do more in creating that understanding for the people above you?
Yeah. So when I first came to Henry Ford, I actually put together a PowerPoint and I felt like it was athletic training 101. So I talked about our curriculum, what Katie was, you know, the types of classes that we're exposed to, the Board of Certification exam. I actually came to Ford in 2011, which then licensure was enacted in the state of Michigan and the rules were promulgated. So they were being enforced. So all athletic trainers had to be licensed. So I kind of put everything together and I made a PowerPoint that was about 30 slides and I showed it to different entities at Henry Ford. Every year our docs have a physician retreat or sports medicine retreat where we talk about strategic planning. And I presented some of that. Now my department chair was from Texas before he came to Detroit. And so he had a little bit of different understanding of athletic training because of different state rules. And once I said, well, we can treat individuals and we can treat injury or illness. He said, wow, that's awesome. Go for it. And so, you know, him being very open-minded was helpful, but it did take some education. And I like to tell people, it's not insulting that you have to educate, right? I think oftentimes in our profession, people think that just because somebody's been exposed to an athletic trainer, did they have a good exposure or good experience? And so you can't just rest on those laurels that they've been around an athletic trainer, but to what level have they been around an athletic trainer?
Yeah, that's been important for me. I think every single year we have to continuously educate. And I think hopefully I've done a really good job of it within our setting and where I'm at, but I know I'm constantly educating. I'm constantly telling people who we are, what we do. You know, even within my area or my school, I have to educate who the interns are, what their limitations are, what my limitations are, what, you know, our assistant, you know, we have to continue to educate. And the more people know, obviously, the better the treatment they're going to get, or they're going to trust us a little bit more. So as we go forward, you know, I used to hate it. I used to hate having to tell people what an athletic trainer is. And there's days where I still, it kind of hits me and I'm like, God, do I really have to go over this again? And, you know, what are the four pillars and, you know, whatever. But at the end, it's always a good thing, right? Like, we have to constantly educate people, and it's the more you do it, the better it is for our profession.
Yeah.
I really like that you said it's not really insulting to have to continuously educate. That's a big step, is to really tell people who we are and what we do. So you said you're part of the licensing board. Obviously that is a leadership position within our state. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So that's been an education piece as well. I know you know that, being in Michigan. Everybody was so excited for the law to be passed in 2006. And then it was about 5 years before the rules were formally promulgated and licensure was being enforced. What's been interesting is getting people outside of our profession, I don't think, have as much of this forethought on it, but getting those in our profession to understand that the licensing board is a separate entity. So you have the Board of Certification, which is our certifying body nationally, but then the state licensing boards are different. And state to state has different laws and different what ATs can do or can't do, who they report to, how they do different things. And so that's been really, I think, an interesting piece, right? So we have a Michigan Athletic Trainer Society, which is our state association, which is a separate entity from the state licensing board, which is part of the government. Now, one of the things that's pretty interesting is, you know, from a state licensing board, we have jurisdiction over those that are licensed. So unlicensed professionals would actually not go through the board. And there are certain things, like, I know people reach out and say, hey, I have this for my pain management, what do you think? And I always tell them to email the licensing board itself to get it in writing, because it doesn't necessarily matter what I think. You know, sometimes things are funneled through the administration there, which is nice to have. And then sometimes they go before the board for certain issues or discussions of things. But it's been, for myself, it's been a lot of learning, and not necessarily learning at a bad level. Just, you know, what do we have jurisdiction over? So the whole purpose of a licensing board in any state, regardless of the profession, is to protect the public. Now, in my opinion, you indirectly protect the profession because you ensure that people that are practicing are doing things the right way, right? So if there's a violation filed or somebody doesn't have the right amount of continuing ed, obviously, are they able to renew their license? So that's something that's really neat to be a part of and be exposed to, but it's so different than a membership organization, which I had a lot of leadership experience with membership organizations. So this was just a different avenue to pursue kind of in my leadership roles.
So what other leadership experiences have you had?
So I have been involved with the Michigan Athletic Trainer Society. Probably the day that I came back to the state of Michigan, somebody said, hey, you want to be involved with the student committee? And I said, sure. And didn't, I think, fully understand what I was agreeing to. Myself and Jody Johnson from Eastern Michigan were co-chairs of that committee. And we actually put together the first student conference in Michigan, which was really neat. I want to say we had about 70 students and probably half the schools in Michigan represented. Now it's grown tremendously. I think they've had over 200 students. They have a quiz bowl associated with it. They just had it this past weekend. At Grand Valley, so they kind of do it at different locations year to year. From there, I then became president-elect of MATS and then president of MATS. I've been involved with GLADA. So for GLADA, I was one of the advisors to the Student Senate Committee, which was pretty neat and exciting to see kind of the minds going a mile a minute and how to channel them in productive ways. And the Student Senate was a tremendous asset to the district in really starting that and really kind of benchmarked it for other state or for other districts, I'm sorry. And then I've been involved with the NATA. I'm currently a board member for the NATAPAC representing Division District 4. And that's been exciting. You know, one of the things that we've discussed is, you know, having the Sports Medicine Licensure Clarity Act, and that was really exciting. You know, I've hit the hill probably 10 times in the past 12 years. And that's, you know, it's neat to be in DC. It's neat to kind of come together with different leaders in the state, or even people that aren't leaders but are interested in hitting the hill and calling on legislators. And for years, you know, you kind of go and some people say, well, what are you guys discussing? You know, we talk about different bills. Sports Medicine Licensure Clarity Act was one of the things that we discussed several years ago, and it kind of went nowhere, and then it got reintroduced and now it's passed. And so that's really exciting to see that come to fruition. And I know the NATA was one of the major players behind seeing that to fruition. And how does that not just impact athletic trainers, but impact other professions that travel with their teams?
I don't want to get too far out into the weeds, but I do want to touch on the importance of that act. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know it was passed, what, 2 weeks ago now?
Yep. Yep. Okay. So the importance of that act is, you know, we all have our athletic teams that we travel with. Now, this is a little bit different. If I'm licensed in Michigan and I go to another state and I try to work in that state, I have to be licensed in that state as well. So there's no reciprocity with license. For the Sports Medicine Licensure Clarity Act, if you have a team from another state come into Michigan and compete, that athletic trainer or that physician or that physical therapist or whoever is part of their medical team that travels is able to come into another state. Now, they have to adhere to their state practice acts, but that's a national law that allows people to do that. Now, in Michigan, we actually had a law passed several years ago where any entity that was coming into Michigan, as long as they were traveling with their team, could then turn around and practice in Michigan. We didn't have to delegate any authority to anybody. And again, they have to adhere to their state practice act. From my understanding, for the Sports Medicine Licensure Clarity Act, it had to do more with liability. So if you're traveling to another state, does your liability insurance carry over? And I think that that was the big question. You know, at Henry Ford Health System, we carry our own, or we self-fund for liability. So there's no issue with that. But if you've got a policy, is there certain things in that policy that would prevent you from being out of state, where this clarifies it?
Nice. So we'll bring it back a little bit. And the big question I wanted to ask was, you know, you had stated earlier, you have about 30 athletic trainers mm-hmm. that you employ, that Henry Ford employs. How do you manage that large group? And I was thinking about that this morning, that last night, you know, I've been a part of some of the continuing education, and you look around the room and you see the room is so diverse and so unique and so dynamic. How do you manage all of that?
So one of my mentors, Coach Bill McDonald, or Coach Matt from the University of Alabama, was the head athletic trainer there for years. One of his sayings is, no one cares what you know till they know you care. And so I take that when I deal with my athletes, when I deal with staff, you know, and I have huge support on my end. I have two lead athletic trainers. I've had discussions with my group. I've gone through some things personally, you know, over the past 5 years, things that I never imagined I'd have to deal with on a personal level. You know, and I kind of talked to my group afterwards and just said, have your one person, right? I don't get offended if staff doesn't call me up because they got to work through something, or they're not, you know, they tell me that they're dealing with something personally, but they don't really want to talk to me about it. I just care that you have one person that you can talk to. And I know Jeremy, when we were at the AT Cares group, I think that that was one of the things that I really took home from that was, you know, who's your one, who's your go-to? We do press our employee engagement every year. And one of our questions, and my staff hate it, but it's, do you have a best friend at work? And some people I don't think like it, because how do you define best friend? I kind of look at that of, who's your go-to, right? So you're having a stressful day or something's going on. Who's your one person? And we have a large enough staff now that, you know, I had a staff member that actually just went to Africa for about 10 days, you know, and provided health care and went with her dad. And he was involved with construction. And it was so awesome that she was able to go, right? So I have staff that are getting married and I give them a week. So I tell them, I don't pick your wedding date, right? You get a week. Now, if you want to take a 2-week honeymoon, can we have that discussion for you to do that in July or in June, at the end of June when there's downtime? But I give them a week, and so you can pick whatever date you want, and that's extremely important. I always tell people, what do you tell your athletes, right? If your athletes come to you and say, hey, I'm thirsty, you go, wow, you're beyond dehydration, right? If you're waiting for thirst, it's a little too late. You really got to start pushing those fluids pretty heavily. It's the same thing with burnout. I've sat down with staff. I kind of do coffee talks, what they've kind of termed it. And I'll go around to coffee shops. John, I know you and I've been to the coffee shop before. And I just check in with them. How's life? How are things going? But I've had a few staff over the years that said, oh, I'll let you know when I'm burnt out. And I'm like, no, you won't. Because when you tell me that you're burnt out, it's a little too late. And it's really important for me that if I have staff leave, it's because it was a professional move, or maybe they had a significant other that got a job transfer out of state. But I never want to lose somebody because they were burnt out. Then I'm failing at my job.
You know, when you have those check-ins with staff, do you find that the staff is more honest with you, or can you sense that they're holding back, concerns, or maybe there's a conflict with another athletic trainer in the system? Do you find that they tend to be a little bit more honest when you have that one-on-one with them?
Yeah, definitely. I have a couple staff that, you know, we have to do semi-annual evaluations on staff, and they are very, very quick when we do them. I can go to coffee with them and we take a full hour or an hour and a half. I really care about people. That drives me as a leader. Sometimes to my detriment, sometimes I care too much. And if I've had to have a harsh conversation with somebody, it can wear on me a little bit and I have to kind of dust myself off. But, it's a relaxed environment, and I have some staff that aren't big coffee drinkers. So then we find kind of a little mom and pop shop in their area and have a sandwich. But it's really important because, you know, like you said, I have 30 athletic trainers. There are some that I see once a month. There are some that I don't necessarily see once a month at our meetings. And if they don't feel comfortable with me, they feel comfortable going to another lead athletic trainer or even their colleagues. And so just having that dialogue and having that honesty is really, really important.
So you have two lead athletic trainers, is it?
Mm-hmm.
What is the importance of having those two lead athletic trainers within that large group?
Well, they have different things that they are kind of charged with. So it takes a little bit of a load off my plate. But I think what's far more important is it allows me to bounce things off of them, right? So think about it, John, right? So you're in your athletic training facility and you have an injury come in and you've got another colleague with you and you say, hey, this isn't something that I deal with all the time. This is what I'm thinking. What do you think? That's the best thing about being a certified athletic trainer and licensed, right? We don't ever have to take an exam again. So it's not dust in a computer, right? But it's important to be able to take a step back sometimes and to be able to have those conversations. So whenever we make decisions, we kind of come together, the three of us, as a group, and we discuss it. Sometimes they roll things out. Sometimes, it's nice just to have a different perspective. And then also with having those positions, it's nice that there is a little bit of a hierarchy. So I'm not talking to their colleagues about something that's going on. I'm talking to somebody that's in a leadership position because I want to be really respectful of people's privacy.
Now, do you find that the other athletic trainers kind of respect that hierarchy, or do they use it to their advantage when it comes to communicating up to you?
No, I think they respect it. It took me a little bit because we didn't have that infrastructure when I got here. Mm-hmm. One of the things when I first got here, I was just a coordinator, and then I was made after being full-time, because for a year I was a consultant or kind of a contingent employee. And then after a year of that, I moved to a full-time position as a coordinator. And then probably a year after that, I moved to supervisor. A few years later, moved to the manager position. And that was just kind of as we were growing in athletic training. But one of the things that was really important was to give a little bit of hierarchy for people to have. And so initially it was, oh, I could just take care of that, right? We all kind of fall into that. It's easier, John, for you to do something than to go make sure that you're holding that person accountable to go to the other person. But we had to do that a little bit. And even as the leads, they had to do that too. You know, hey, I'm happy to bounce this idea off of you, but you know, you got to go to this person because that's really where their area of oversight is. So that was really important. You know, now I think the three of us, nobody gets offended if somebody goes to somebody else. And that's really important. Again, everybody's got their go-to or their best friend.
So I want to touch on conflict. You know, we see conflict in our setting in athletic training. We have conflict with coaches. We have conflict with, you know, players. We have conflict with administration up and down. But how do you manage conflict between athletic trainers?
Manage is a good word. I kind of laugh because you talked about the herding cats. I learn a lot from my kids. So I have a 14 and 16 year old, and they're girls. So there can be conflict from time to time, I think a little bit more so than if I had two boys. They're both heavy feelers too. So that makes life a little interesting when you got teenagers. But, you know, sometimes I try to take a step back with staff and just have them sit down and have that dialogue. And it can be with anybody, right? Sometimes it's just important to bring the two sides together, because if both are going for the same cause, right, whether it's the betterment of the athlete or the health and safety of the athlete, even if you think of dealing with coaches, right, coaches just want the athletes to play, and they want the athletes to play because then they're okay, right? Nobody wants to hear that a kid has a season-ending injury or they have something that might not get better without some intervention. And so I think just bringing both sides together. Initially, when I first started out in leadership, I would go, okay, I got this, right? So somebody would say something to me and I'd go to that person, and then it would backfire on me because, you know, I'm kind of telephone, tell a friend. And sometimes people are more candid with you than when they have to confront that other individual. So I just try to bring both sides together. You know, I think just getting everybody to understand the culture that we've created at Henry Ford is to be your best, right? So I think people have that understanding. One of the things that was a little bit hard when I first got here is we all kind of operated in silos, right? So I've got my school. If I'm covering my school, I'm good to go. Well, what about your colleague? You know, John, I know you've seen that. You've had a few of our staff that had some things come up for them that were great professional opportunities. And so you had a couple of different folks that were covering with you when we initially thought we were just going to have the one person. You know, and so they communicate really well. I don't micromanage. And so I think that that's really important when you deal with the conflict, is oftentimes they're working it out themselves, or they have that go-to person that can help funnel them in the right direction.
Yeah, it's been interesting for me. I mean, you know, as soon as we started, one of the things that we had talked about personally was, you know, getting me out of my own silo. You know, I was literally on an island in my own school, and I needed help, and I needed somebody to be there for me and to be with me. And, you know, and I just looked at it at that time. I was really looking at the, I just need help. I need an extra set of hands. I need another athletic trainer because we have 1200 student athletes. And then you were able to kind of bring it back to me and say, yeah, you need that, but you also need a person to be there with you. And that was so very important to me, because not going to lie, it took me a while to actually understand what you meant at that moment. Cause it was like, no, I don't need another person. I need another athletic trainer. And, you know, I've had two great athletic trainers come from Henry Ford, and, you know, Ibrahim was only there for a little bit with me for a couple months. Awesome guy. And I think about him every once in a while, and he was just such a good person to work with. And then, you know, we talked about Dana last week, and Dana has been amazing in that obviously we've known each other, but to work with each other more, you know, we're feeling things out when it comes to the professional aspect. But it's been great to have that second person, or that person I can bounce ideas off of, or tell a funny story. I had a really funny story happen on Friday night, like a personal story. And it was like, oh, I can't wait to tell Dana about this. You know, it was just such a fun thing. And then I took a step back and I thought, this is what she meant. I needed that second person. I needed that person to be there with me and to help me, you know, not just be a better athletic trainer, but be a better person. And it's been awesome to have that around. And, you know, you talked about that, that who's your go-to at work. And I didn't really have that. And it's helped me be a better leader within my setting too. And just having that second person, you know, and luckily we haven't had any conflict. So that was a good thing that we were able to talk about that, you know, in your setting and having that ability to bring people together. And it's been interesting for me to be a fly on the wall when it comes to Henry Ford, because obviously I'm not employed by Henry Ford, but when I've gone to meetings and taken a step back and see how different it is and how you would have to manage them and not micromanage, because it would be impossible to micromanage such a large dynamic group. You know, is that something that you've learned over the years and being different and being in different leadership positions?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I would love to sit here and tell you like 100% of the decisions that I make are 100% mine and lying. So 99% of the time it's scanning the environment, talking with somebody, whether it be my boss or my leads or the group. You know, yeah, I own those decisions as the manager. However, 99% of the time there's some type of feedback I can put. I think when I first started in leadership, I was going to change the world, right? I think we all do. I have a 16-year-old daughter that it's like looking in the mirror sometimes. It's a little scary because she's going to change the world. And I applaud her, but I just want to help one person, right? And have that spread. So, you know, we have a wide variety of schools. I mean, we have, you know, the privates, with Cranbrook and Country Day, all the way down to the publics. You know, we have some inner city schools that we've worked with. We have suburban schools that we work with. And at the end of the day, it's so different. And I think you just have to, you know, put one foot in front of the other and really just help people. You know, that's how I kind of recharge myself. You know, I volunteer at the Plymouth Lions Club. So, you know, I'm doing parking when we have certain festivals so that we can donate money. You know, we are heavily involved with Penricton Center for the Blind. We help with leader dogs and other things. And that's what recharges me. And so just being able to help people. And, you know, I've had some staff that have left us for something different professionally. And it stung a little bit when they left, but it was mixed emotions, right? I was excited that they were able to go on their path. And I kind of tease some of my staff because sometimes they'll say, well, in 2 years I might be here. And I say, hey, in a year I might not be here, right? I might be someplace different. You know, being able to, as corny as it sounds, but being able to make a difference one person at a time is really, really important. And again, just making sure that you have that connection with folks. When we interview, believe it or not, we don't really ask athletic training questions. If you're certified and licensed and you've gone through a program, we want to know how you deal with conflict. We want to know how you go above and beyond. How would your colleagues describe you? So those are some of the questions that we ask. You know, what are your two areas of weakness? Everybody's got weaknesses. And I think that that's the neat thing. You know, you kind of alluded to this, that everybody's a little bit different on my staff. And that's a good thing, right? Because some of my weaknesses might be a strength for my staff. And how do you use that to your advantage? So like even you and Dana and your interactions, there are some things that she's going to be stronger suited at, and it doesn't make you inferior or any less, and vice versa for her. So just having that understanding.
Yeah, that's been the fun thing with having Dana there. And I may have touched on this last week. You know, it was Dana's able to, she's the softer of the two of us, but she's able to get out some things from kids that I may not be able to get out. And there's kids that I've known for 4 years and 5 years with older family. And there's a girl right now that we both helped her with an injury, and immediately she has taken to Dana, and it's been awesome. Obviously it hasn't hurt my feelings at all. Like it's been amazing to see that this girl has gravitated towards her, and you know, that's, she's able to handle those situations. And then I've been able to handle the maybe tougher situations. We had a situation throughout our football season where I was able to be the stronger person, and it helped her with her practice at our school too. So, you know, having that complimentary part has been awesome for us. And, you know, working through those things has been a really good experience.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I think what's neat about that is, you know, for whatever reason, people gravitate to other people, mm-hmm. right? Somebody might want to gravitate to somebody because they have a softer side. Some people might gravitate to somebody because they have a little bit of a harder side. Everybody's just wired different.
Right. And that's important too, when you're looking at managing a whole system of people, is just trying to find those certain areas where you're able to connect or create relationships with people is so very important.
Definitely.
So what, you know, obviously we've been talking about this, and I think you may have answered this already, but what's a goal that kind of keeps you going, you know, day to day and dealing with other athletic trainers and sports medicine professionals?
So what keeps me going? When I was, there was a point in my career where I was looking for a job, and I called a hospital or health system and said, this is who I am. These are my degrees. You know, I contacted their HR and I said, what opportunities do you have at your organization? And they told me to go to community college and get my PTA. And that came from HR. You know, I think that that's one of the things that drives me professionally is I know what we can do. I know the value that we have. And how do I break down those barriers for other folks? You can take it even to a staff level, right? You know, we use flex time. All of our ATs are salaried that are full time. And I track hours. And there are some staff where I say, hey, you know what? You're getting a little high on hours here. Like, what's going on at the school? Do we need to send another staff member out there to help you? You know, because that's really important too, right? Is finding that balance. Not just, I think athletic training is such a neat field. I've never met a group of more hardworking people in my life. But we have to manage that a little bit better. We can't be all things to everybody. And I think even for myself, I had to kind of come to that resolution of I can't be all things to everybody. And that kind of shifted me a little bit. You know, I wear many hats, right? So manager, even athletic trainer, right? I still stay clinically active and I cover from time to time. I covered your school, John, and that was pretty exciting. John allowed me to cover my first high school swim meet. That was pretty neat. The water was a little relaxing and the humidity got me a little bit. I'd walk around, but you know, I'm a wife and a mother, and sometimes I'm a mentor and a sister, a mom of dogs, right? So sometimes I'm doing really good at balancing all that, and other times I'm not. And so I just kind of have to hit the reset button and just do better. I know early on in my career, when I was starting my family, I went to a few talks that talked about balancing work and career, you know, and I really absorbed a lot of what they said. And I think, you know, a few years later, after being in the throes of all of it, I said to myself, I want to stand up and give that presentation and say, if anybody tells you this is how you balance work and family, they're all lying, because it's something you got to work at every day. So if they tell you that they figured it out, I want to stand up there like Jim Carrey and just yell liar. You know, because it is work, right? So there are some days where I'm not really good at being home for my family, but then my husband picks up the slack. And then there's other times where, you know, I've had some staff that I've walked out at 2:00 on a Friday because all that stuff can wait till Monday and there's some downtime. And sometimes they've grabbed me and walked me out. So I think just evolving has been really important. You know, it's like medicine, right? We don't, I remember when I first started out in this profession, I remember our team doc saying to folks, you know, that were seniors that had ACL, and they would ask them, what are you going to do once you graduate? And there was one kid that said he was going into business, and he said, oh, we don't need to fix your ACL. And I had another kid that was going to the academy, the police academy, and he said, oh, we definitely need to fix yours. You know, I also remember, too, we didn't do contralateral side You know, so standing on a leg and then doing the four-way hip, standing on the involved leg was just as important as strengthening that leg because you have proprioception. You know, look at how we treat ACLs now and how we prevent them. So we've evolved in medicine. You have to evolve as a person too.
Yeah, that's one of the important things that we've discussed too is it's always the practice of being an athletic trainer is no different than the practice of being a leader or being in a leadership position or putting yourself in a leadership position. It's always evolving. It's always changing. It's always, it's something that you have to work at every single day. You know, one of the things I said was I wish that I could get to that point where I know it or it's all just going to work out. Right. But once you get to that point, something is going to change. Something is going to come up and you're constantly having to evolve and learn something. But, you know, is there something that made you come to that realization that you need a balance within your work-life setting?
Yeah, my youngest was born with a reflux of her bladder. And when she was 8 weeks old, we didn't know that she had it. And she had about 105 degree temp. And I took her as an infant to urgent care because I thought the thermometer was broke. And they said, you have to go to the ER. And I went to the ER and they tested her urine. They did a spinal tap and they did a chest x-ray. And they said, she's got a fever for one of three reasons. And it turns out that she had this reflux. It made me take a step back because I had colleagues that made the comment to me that, you know, when she was four, she had it corrected. They didn't know that she had anything. And it was great because I didn't let it impact my work, but then it also made me kind of realize that it's okay to not be everything to everybody all the time. You know, when my kids were one and three, and I was at CMU, I started the doctoral program and I finished in 4 years. And it was really important then, you know, I think of what things have defined me. It's been the balance of personal and professional. You know, when I was in grad school, my father was diagnosed with cancer my second year of grad school, and he waited to tell me until the day I started classes for my second year because he didn't want me coming home. And I was so embraced by the staff at Alabama, and they really helped me probably through one of the worst times personally that I had gone through. You know, that was really important. My daughter, with her reflux of her bladder, you know, and just how much everybody helped me with that, you know, with her having to have surgery. So you look at, you know, different things like that, that shape you a little bit, and those personal things have come up and not only had me hit the pause button or the reset button, but also really showed me, you know, where my troops were, where my kind of army was, right, of people that support you. I'm pretty strong-willed and pretty stubborn, and John, I know you know that. So never in a million years would I ask for help, but to see people stand up and they didn't wait for me to ask. They told me how they were going to help me. So that was really important. In terms of knowing that I can't be all things to everybody, I think the other impact was when I got my doctorate. I remember when I first started my doctorate and I said, oh, I'm going to answer these questions, right? And so when I was done with my doctorate, I have a saying in my dissertation from William Yeats Butler that says, education isn't the filling of a bucket, but the lighting of a pail. And I really took that to heart of sometimes when you answer one question or you figure one thing out, then two other things are presented in front of you. You know, and for me with my doctorate, I felt like the dissertation was I jumped through that fiery hoop. Maybe I'd be on fire a little bit. I'd brush myself off and then I'd stand up and go, whoo, got through that one. And then oop, there's another fiery hoop in front of you. So I think it's looking at life as, you know, managing those obstacles and having people to support that is so hugely important. You just don't realize it until you go through it.
That's, you know, I think that's one of the big things that's has caused us to be close within each other is you know, we're both stubborn. We're never going to ask for help until we tell each other we have to have, you know, need help. You know, and that's, you know, we've had coffee before and you've sat across from me and said, you need to relax or you need to do that. And it's like, All right. Yeah, I do need that. I need the relaxing, but I also needed that person to be frank and honest with me and say, you know, almost grab me by the face and shake me, you know, like you would do a dog or something. But, you know, that was so important to me to have somebody to do that and say, relax, calm down. You've got this. But also to, you know, for me, that personal, to find that personal balance, you know, if I can't give everything to work, it's because I'm not giving everything to my personal life too. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm doing a disservice to both of those things. So if I can't do really good at work, I'm obviously not going to be doing really well in my personal life. I'm not going to be able to provide for my family. I'm not going to be able to be there. And that was one of the big things that I've learned over the past couple of years. I think a lot of athletic trainers come out and they are ready to get after it and they want to change the world, like you said. But you can't change the world if you can't change yourself, and you need to be aware of who you are and your limitations before you go ahead and do any life-changing experiences or, you know, try to change things around you, because it's so important that you take care of yourself and take care of your family and the things that are important to you, right?
Someone once told me it's not selfish, it's self-fulfill. Mm-hmm. So you have to fill yourself before you can help others. And right. That's really stuck with me.
So, you know, do we look at that as a leadership trait? Is that a leadership trait of somebody who takes care of themselves?
Absolutely. You can't be all things to everybody, right? And if you have to walk the walk. So, you know, there are times where maybe I don't do a good job myself. And so I have to take a step back and go, you know what, you're right. I'm very fortunate that I have people around me that are willing to not so much shake my face, but say, hey, Christina, what are you doing? You know, and it's really important to have those people. I mean, my two lead ATs, you know, one of them, Nicole, which, you know, Nicole, I was diagnosed with breast cancer a little under 5 years ago. And, I was emailing her from the hospital bed after surgery. Now, I would love to tell you it's because work is such a priority. I just didn't want to be there, mm-hmm. right? I did not want to be in recovery. I didn't want to be dealing with it. And it was a nice distraction. You know, and her and I actually had those conversations after the fact of, you know, because it was important to me to be candid with her and say, listen, you did an awesome job of helping me while I was gone. Please don't take me sending emails as the fact that I couldn't let go. I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want to have to deal with it. I didn't want to have to process it. And it was a nice distraction. And so then, you know, some things happened where things were a little bit flipped for her. And she did the whole, okay, don't be mad because I'm emailing you. And I said, nope, I'm not mad. I get it. Right. So I think that that's something that's really important is, you know, having those candid conversations and getting people to understand we all have things that we go through, our insecurities or areas that we need to improve on. And again, as a leader, it's not a failure in recognizing that. It's actually neat to see the human side of people mm-hmm. And understand that everybody's got their things that they're working on.
There's times where I forget that it's not just you and us and Jeremy on the call right now. Jeremy, we do have a Facebook question for Christina.
All right. So Chris, I think it's Eulian, Eulein, asked, do you have any ideas what criteria they use to choose who they interview or talk topics they talked about?
So for staff members?
Sure.
You know, obviously for... You know, I work for a health system. We have requirements of our positions. If people have to meet all of the requirements for the positions, for HR to send over applications from there. I don't think it's one thing or the other. If somebody meets all of the requirements, there are times that we have to delimit our pool of candidates. And so we have to make that decision of who we're going to delimit. Other times we, have a lesser pool of candidates and we can phone screen all of them. So it really just depends. I have a wide variety of staff. I have some staff that have been in the profession. They're entering, you know, 20 something years as a professional. And I have some that are fresh out of school or a few years of experience. And so as long as they're meeting our minimum requirements, we go through every candidate as long as HR has sent them over.
Good. I've liked to ask this question just because I feel personally I've learned a lot from the bad experiences of the people I've been around. And I think those things have been as important, if not sometimes more important than the really good experiences that I've had. Are there any bad experiences that you've had or you've dealt with that have shaped the way you are a leader or the way you manage your system?
Absolutely. This person will remain anonymous, but many years ago, I had somebody tell me that I wasn't a hard worker. Mm. And it was because I was trying to balance my personal and professional. At first I really took it to heart. But then I turned around and said, okay, they were wrong. They kind of felt that to be in our profession, you had to be somewhere morning, noon, and night. And again, when you look at value, right, I'm a value of nobody if I'm pulling 14, 16 hour days repeatedly. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I think has really driven me when dealing with staff. Again, they report their hours. I do it to look at the business aspect of things. But then also because I know you're going to have people that naturally gravitate to work a little bit more. You know, sometimes it's easier just to say, oh, I'm John, you know this, right? I'm not going to have Dana come in. I'll just tackle it. Or mm-hmm. maybe you say, wow, it's, you know, we've got four different events going on that day. It's going to be a lot to manage. I'll just do it myself. Right. And sometimes you self-sacrifice. And again, not to anybody's benefit if you look at it that way. So it was really important to me. I kind of took that to heart. Like I said, when my girls were 1 and 3, I had a full-time job, an hour and 15 minute commute one way, because I lived in Lansing and worked at CMU. And I finished my doctorate in 4 years. And I was very, very proud of that. I'd say probably one of my qualities is stubbornness. My husband likes to say, well, you're just smart. And I said, no, I'm stubborn. I was going to finish that thing. And I put my head down and I plugged away and got done in 4 years.
That's good. What are habits that you keep now that you think benefit you?
I like to walk my dogs. believe it or not, I'm up every morning at 5. I think John and I were joking earlier. I don't really wake up to an alarm anymore, which I'm a little sad about. but I'm up every morning, probably between 4:30 and 5 o'clock, and I go take the dogs for a walk for an hour. I like to hang out with my girls. When they want to hang out with me, they're 14 and 16, so they kind of recharge me. And it's been neat to see them develop in ways that they want to develop, not necessarily be a minion of me. I like to travel. Somebody laughed at me. I do not plan my vacations. If anybody out there would like to plan a vacation for me, I will happily let you do it. But I like to say, I'm going to take this week off and then just hop in a car and go. So you'll find me looking for hotels or other things like the night before to book. But I've done that with a few times with my girls. And it's been neat to do that just to get away and not have everything planned. So that really recharges me in my personal life. Unless it has to be planned, I try not to plan.
Yeah, that's, I kind of find myself doing the same thing. I'm such a prioritizer, planner. You've seen it, the calendar on my desk. If somebody were to look at my Google Calendar right now, I think they would have a seizure. It's so complex. This week is a crazy week for us, but, you know, I live by that calendar. I live by that, prioritizing and planning. But when I do take a step away, I do just kind of let things go and just experience life for once. And I'm set for a big vacation in, within the next month. And everybody's asking me, what's the plan? What are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm flying out. I'm going to land. I've already got my hotel set. And then a week later, I'm flying home. Like, that's my plan right there. And I'm not going to overplan because I want to experience things. I do such a, I don't know if it's a good job or if it's a bad thing that I plan every single day, but you know, it keeps me on schedule. It keeps me going. But I really do enjoy the fact that I'm going to take a moment and step out of myself and just experience things. So, I do the same thing. What is your definition of leadership?
Oh, never really thought about that. I think it would involve leading by example. I think putting people first, being human, being a humanist, right? And just, you know, plugging away at things that need to be tackled. I think that that would be my definition of leadership.
What one word describes you as a leader?
Caring.
All right.
Yeah. You took one word.
I agree. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this series was just to show, you know, you said it kind of right at the start. People really don't care what you know until they know what they, how did you say it?
People don't care what you know till they know you care.
Right. And I think that's been one of the things that has, you know, I've been able to be open and honest with you and communicate with you is because, yeah, you're very educated. Yeah, you've been in leadership positions, you know, all over. And you know, I look at you as a mentor, but I really, the reason I do that is because of how much you care. I don't work for you at all, but I know you've been a person that has looked after me over the last handful of years because that's who you are as a person. And I think that has really helped and benefit you within your setting of caring for and managing such a large group of athletic trainers, because athletic trainers are difficult, right? We are a difficult group, but because we are so, we care about what we're doing, and a lot of times we don't want to be managed, you know, because we're typically in our own silos or on our islands. But I think you've done a really good job of bringing people together and, you know, making them communicate, making them work together, and showing that we do care for each other, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's such an important thing, is athletic trainers caring for other people, and not just other people, but other athletic trainers, because it's only going to help with our profession as we go forward. We've got a lot of things changing over the next couple of years, and if we're not there for each other, it's there's a lot of things that can fall apart. So yeah. I think that was a good word for you to put forward.
Thanks, John. I was nervous.
Jeremy, do you have any other questions?
One thing that I definitely want to reiterate is you said that you track hours for your staff because you want to ensure they're not overworking. And that's something I love, because with this entry-level master stuff, people are like, well, those kids aren't used to working hard. And I said, you know what? I want to be on their boat. I don't want to be on this boat that's working 80, 90, 100 hours a week. I want to go, I'm ready to jump ship and go over there. And so that is amazing that as a leader, you're saying, hey, I'm being proactive. I want to help you succeed in the long run, not just today, but in the long run. And so that's something that we all need to be doing, is looking at our hours, because I don't have a manager that is managing my hours or what I can and can't do, that kind of thing. It's basically just a, you got to get it done. And there's nobody else for them to send in and say, hey, can you do this? Unless I personally request off, which I do. I just say, you know what? I'm going to go take a weekend away with my wife, or I'm leaving early today because we're going camping, that kind of thing, whatever it is. But I love that you do that for your people and you help them succeed in the long run. So thanks for mentioning that. And I just don't want to get away from somebody else missing out that how important that is.
Yeah. And I think what's important is, it's like anything in life, right? You're talking about students. I was a professor, right? The first week of class, you get the syllabus. How much studying are they really doing? Not much. But come midterms, man, they're in the books. They're probably not going out much. They're in study groups. And so life's that way too. So there's always an ebb and flow to schedules. And, you know, we have, obviously in Michigan, the day after Thanksgiving, and then that Saturday is when MHSAA plays for football finals. We have some schools that go, others that don't. And, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of to see some of the staff have, you know, 20 hours that week and the next week if their teams didn't make it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. In the summer, you know, I have some staff that, you know, are covering their responsibilities, and maybe they're working 4 days a week, or they're accessible, or whatever that may be. And I think it's really important for people to understand. I used to say this all the time, do you want a job or a career? So I think that you have to be very aware of that. You know, if you want a job, my daughter works at Tropical Smoothie. She punches in and she punches out, right? You know, she's doing it because she wants money, because she's 16. But if you want a career, I think you have to find that balance. But I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that, you know, I'm always trying to get people to work less. I think it's ensuring that we are finding that balance, because there are ebbs and flows to the season. And, you know, if it's the Christmas holiday and there's not much going on, but my ATs are accessible and they've kind of got what I call a flex bank, they're burning that time, and that's okay. You know, everybody gets upset and says, well, I actually had to say this to one of my staff member. I think the comment was, did you really just call me about my hours? I said, yeah. Do you need me to come out and cover? No, I don't want you coming out and cover. I said, okay, but you know, if you're doing it 1 or 2 weeks and you've got a lot of hours, fair enough. But I'm looking at your hour log here in your timesheet, and you don't have any time off. There's not one day to recharge. And it actually helps to be able to have those conversations. I'm kind of in a unique position because, and John can attest to this, if Dana's gone on some family time, he's going to have one of our athletic trainers out there. He might even have me out there. And that's not a bad thing, right? Everybody shouldn't feel bad for wanting to live their life. And so that's really important for me, whether I charge John's school 20 hours and all 20 are Dana, or 15 are Dana and 5 are me, it's still the same charge.
Right. I think that's been important too, is being effective. If you're managing those hours, if you're managing yourself and being, you know, aware of where you're at, you're going to be more effective as an athletic trainer. And part of that too is being open with the people you work around too. You say, hey, listen, I am going to tap out at X amount of hours, or I can't do anymore because I'm just not going to be effective. We were in that situation on Saturday. We had a massive weather delay, and they had talked about bringing the game back at 7 p.m. and the game started at 1. And I said it, hey, listen, we're not going to be effective because at that point I would have been working for 36 out of, you know, 48 hours. That's not, you're not going to get anything. I'm going to pull my staff after this time frame. And I said, okay, well, we're not just putting a body there. We're putting an effective body there. And if we're not going to be effective, we're not going to be a good athletic trainer. What good are we anyways? So it is important to be effective and finding that the ability to manage those times and, you know, to have somebody like you to be an advocate for other athletic trainers is so very important.
Definitely.
So I want to finish, you know, like every podcast, we're going to close with a closing gratitude. So Christina, is there anybody that you would like to thank?
I think about my dad a lot. My dad died in 1999. And I really owe a lot to him. My dad was divorced in the early 80s. He had custody of us. I remember my dad being a Girl Scout dad when they didn't have Girl Scout dads. You know, and my grandma, both of them raised me to be who I am today. So obviously I really, really appreciate and value them. Thanks for having me on here. I think this is awesome. You know, some people along the way, Coach Mack at University of Alabama was huge for me. He was very, very stressed a lot the importance of family and making me feel like I had a family. And then obviously my daughters and my husband. My husband has been extremely supportive of all the different things that I've tackled. You know, he kind of laughs sometimes and says, well, I'm not doing that, but I support you doing that. Okay, thanks, honey. And so he really, you know, he really pushes me to be a better person, and that's awesome. And then my staff, I would not be able to do what I do without my staff. I mean, they're pretty awesome. They're all different. They're all unique, but they are really, really awesome. And I appreciate all that they do for their athletes. I don't think people see, honestly, how much they do.
Jeremy?
All right, so there it was a Justin Strife who was watching live on Facebook and gave you a big thumbs up. So just wanted to throw that out there. Justin, thanks for watching live, and I appreciate that. So my gratitude this week is yesterday before church, I was cleaning dishes, and I told my son, hey, go get your shoes and socks on. And, like, he wasn't doing it, and so, like, I got onto him, and then he went in there and closed the door. Well, slamming the door is one of those things as a parent, you know, okay, let it go. But then, like, he continued to, like, hit the door as, you know, like an 8-year-old kid would do. But what he was really doing was leaning against the door to put his shoes and socks on, like I told him. But what I saw was that he was continuing to hit the door because he was mad at me and because he was going to do something that he knew irritated me. So I go in there and, shove the door open, shove him away from the door, and get on to him. You were doing this, and I know what you were doing. You were doing this and this. And then, like, Dad, listen, that's not what I was doing. This is what I was doing. No, son, I know what you were doing because I have x-ray vision, right? And so, like, just, you know, as we're going through the adoption process, we're learning about trust-based relationship. And, you know, as I'm going through the stuff, the dichotomy, where he talks about being able to follow your followers, like being able to trust their decision. And so I had to stop, get down on my knee and say, son, I messed up. I didn't give you an opportunity to be honest. I didn't trust you when you were being honest. I apologize. Will you forgive me? And so the lessons that I can learn from my own children is amazing as a leader, because I am tasked with leading my wife and my kids. And I mess up, you know, just slightly less than the times that I get it right. But that lesson yesterday is just, I don't want my relationship to be that he has to feel like he has to be perfect or fear Dad, but that he feels like he can be honest in any situation. And so I'm thankful that I had the opportunity to go back and correct it, and that he was forgiving and that it wasn't something serious. And I hope that going forward, I'm more willing to remember that and listen first and then continue to kind of figure out what the situation is and what it needs. So
this has been awesome. I think, every single one of us, or each one of us, have it's been family centric. So that was my closing gratitude for today, is I wanted to thank my family for supporting me. And I didn't know that they had followed along and listened to the podcast. And I spent some time with them on Saturday night. I had a whole, you know, we had a late Friday night, I had an early Saturday morning, and I just get around family, and for them to let me know that they are aware and that they've been supporting has been awesome. You know, sometimes I put myself in my own little silos, and with work, and once I leave family, I just kind of jump back and forth. But to see that they're there to support me and to be with me, and you know, that they're out there listening and you know, supporting me and everything has been tremendous, and it's been refreshing that you get that. So my gratitude goes out to my family, not just my parents, but everybody that's been there for me. So very large family. I'm not going to take the next hour to name everybody. So thank you.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, for Jeremy, Dr. Ayers, John Seacoast, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership. Ayers, that's EYERS. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership. Ayers. John, who we got next?
We should be talking with Larry Cooper on Thursday, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so Larry is leading into retirement. So he just recently retired, and he's still providing leadership to athletic training. So as we got 2-3 more shows in the leadership series, we would love for you to join us. Again, this one will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership. Ayers, and obviously sportsmedicinebroadcast.com would have all the stuff that you need on there. So
that's it for me. Thank you, everybody, for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye.